Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Lillard defended by Schroeder. Spread floor. Two on the left, two on the right. Lillard down the left side of the lane. Kick out. Hood raising for three. Got it! Rodney Hood, nothing but white cord, and the Blazers lead it by five with 30 and 3/10 seconds remaining.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Kendrick can really shoot the ball to right field. The 0-1, and he tries to, and he hits it down the right field line. It's a long run into the corner, and it's gone! It hit the foul pole! Howie Kendrick with a two-run homer! And Washington has taken the lead.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
The 3-2 on the way. Swing and a miss. Hudson gets him. Throws his glove towards his teammates as they race out of the dugout. And the celebration begins for the Washington Nationals as they come together in a cluster on the infield. And for the first time ever, the Washington Nationals are World Series champions.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080, The Fan.
Two in Rip City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan.
Is that supposed to be your scary voice?
Ooh.
We already got goblins in the studio.
That was maybe your best work of your entire career. I don't want to offend you with that comment, but
that was fantastic.
That was great on the fly improv. Yeah. I loved it.
I love Swigart's reactions when something goes wrong, like it's just not playing right away, and you look over, he just has like the hands up, like, what the hell? Like, what the hell's wrong with the system?
Yeah, I punched the same button I've punched for years right there at 11:59.
Must be the goblins. You should pull that as a drop. That'd be funny. Anytime somebody plays like crap, must have been the goblins.
Yeah, I think the goblins got him last night. Took over the spirits, man.
My three-year-old's dressed up like Supergirl this morning, and all she did running around the house, ooh, I'm spooky.
Just kept saying that over and over and over again.
I was like, you're not getting candy every time you say that. We gave you one piece one time because it was cute. We're not doing that every time.
I always find the folks who dress up and come into work, it's a bold decision. You want to sit in that all day at the office? It's not like we're not like it's an hour and a half for trick-or-treating, but there's a couple of people here in the building today that are rocking a bit of a Halloween costume.
Yeah, but if we had a good incentive, we would all do it.
Would we?
$100 gift card?
No.
No.
Where's
really?
The gift card to?
Costco.
Is it just like a Visa card, like $100 basically?
No. $150 cash.
Probably not.
No.
$200 cash.
You'd probably have to get to $500 for me to put in the time and effort
really?
To act. Because look,
you
I'm
can
not,
make a great costume without time and effort.
Yeah, I'm not creative though. And if you're going to put in the time and effort to win that gift card, you're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to think outside the box, come up with something. So there's a lot that goes into that, and your chances of winning aren't great.
I would dress up as a snake and wear a Kevin Durant jersey.
I'm a snake.
Guess what I am? Hello.
That's not bad. I don't think you would win, though.
I think you guys are both insane. $300 cash, and I'm painting my face. I'm painting my body. Let's go.
And you just got to sit around all awkwardly in the office the rest of the day.
I would come in as the it clown if $300 is on the line.
That was the weird thing about dressing up. I remember as a kid in like elementary school, you'd wear a costume to school, and you'd have to sit in the classroom all day in your Halloween costume.
Yeah, and it was cool at the beginning because everybody would see each other's costumes, but some people you'd go, oh, that's going to be uncomfortable all day, isn't it?
You got to wear a mask. You're like breathing into it in the hot. Air is pouring back into your face, sweating.
We had, I think it was fourth or fifth grade, we had a kid in my class and he dressed and he had a big box. I don't remember what his costume was, robot or something. And his mom put a big old box over his body. His arms barely stuck out. He was a robot and he had trouble walking. Well, he liked to play football with us at recess. We used to be the 49ers versus the Cowboys.
That's a legendary matchup.
Every recess. And he was on the other team. And I remember I ended up having to play defense on him. He's running like a slant type route over the middle. And whoever was quarterbacking threw the ball. And I remember they hit him. He couldn't catch it because his arms couldn't come in. So it smacked him in the box and he just fell over.
robot malfunction. He's got like a Christmas Story kind of thing. I can't put my arms down.
It was kind of similar to that a little bit.
I can't get up.
So happy Halloween to everybody. Are we doing any parties? Anybody got any big plans?
No, I got nothing. We're pounding pizza here in the office. I know that. They ordered a bunch of pizza, and you should see the stampede of people that quickly maneuvered their way over there, filling up their plates as fastly as they could. We're pounding pizza, baby.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything worse than when you're trying not to eat pizza and somebody orders a bunch of pizza.
Yeah.
There was an individual who I will not call out by name. Sources say there was one coworker of ours who walked up maybe second, third in line for pizza. He grabbed 8 slices on his plate and goes, "What you doing?" And he turned around and walked away.
Loaded up.
Wow. 8?
No.
Hey, he's got a long day.
Even on a good day, even if I've been waiting all day, can't do 8 pizzas.
You think it's about what? 8 slices in one large,
now,
right?
About 8? I will be fair, though.
No, large is usually 12.
Let me talk as the local fatty here, okay? Let me be fair for a moment. Not all slices of pizza are created equal.
No, get out of here. You're going to try to go small slivers, bigger slices. Get out of here.
There were some slices that were essentially like 4 bites. That's it. And then it's gone. Wrong. And then you have slices of pizza that are wide, like a quarter of the pizza. So if you get 8, it doesn't mean that you have 8 full-size slices. You could have 2 or 3, maybe
these,
little snacks for
these
later.
These were, I would call them average-sized slices.
I hate to break this to you.
It's damn near a whole pizza.
I know exactly what you're trying to play here. You're trying to play the innocent fat guy card. One, you're not even fat anymore, so it doesn't really fly. And two, you can't say that, it has to be cut a certain amount of length for it to count. However they cut it, that's slice.
That's a slice of pizza?
Does not matter if it's a slim one, if it's a wide one.
I disagree.
Now, I will say there is one particular chain of pizza that is notorious for cutting really thin slices. Round Table.
I'm a big slice guy.
Pietro's kind of does that. They do a bunch of thin slices. Mm. I like that.
Yeah, they want you to gobble
them
down.
Skinny slices.
Yeah, skinny ones.
Yeah, you get more slices out of your pizza. I'm a big slice guy. I'm a New York guy.
You like to kind of fold in the middle.
Yeah,
you
get a sandwich. Yeah.
You
got
to have a fairly
that.
Thin crust, though, to be able to do that.
You do, yeah. You get a thin crust, big slice, fold it in half, two pieces, that's all you need. Boom, you're done.
Yeah, so if you ordered, let's say you ordered a medium pizza. You're all alone. It's a night. You're going to do whatever you want. The wife's gone.
Oh, a medium?
If you order a medium?
That's
that is the skinniest thing you've ever said. Who orders
a medium pizza?
What are you, 8? Jesus, man. Yeah, must be nice to be Sprague.
No.
I'm cutting back on my carbs. I only want a medium pizza. I can't remember the last time I ordered a pizza that wasn't family size or extra large. If you're going to order a pizza, you do it
for... You live in a house, by the way, with just you and one other human being.
You do it for the leftovers. You go as far as you can go, and then you got pizza for 3 days.
I got lunch tomorrow.
Who gets medium pizza?
The only reason you get a medium pizza is because the kids haven't learned to appreciate all the toppings, and so you just want a little cheese pizza.
Right, or if you and the significant other each want your own personalized medium pizza, and you can't agree on a combination.
God, it was just an example. It wasn't even my ordering habit, but now I'm going to be labeled medium pizza guy.
You're medium pizza, bro. I'm ashamed of you.
So, okay.
Medium t-shirt guy.
Currently wearing a medium right now. You guys are taking away my story, and now you're just making it about me, and I don't like that. So what I was going to say was, if you were ever home alone, you ordered a pizza all for yourself, and you said, screw this, dude.
Sure.
I don't care. I'm eating the whole thing tonight, which I think we all could do that, right?
Yeah.
I could
yeah.
easily do that.
For sure.
You wouldn't go, I ate the whole pizza, and someone goes, how many slices did you eat? You wouldn't count the thin ones. You'd just go, 4. But you ate the whole pizza.
That actually, if you were to eat an entire pizza by yourself, like say you get a Papa Murphy's, you cut it yourself, that would be the way to do it. You just cut it into 4 quarters, and you say, how many slices of pizza you have last night? 4. 4 slices.
Yeah,
that was it.
But then eventually you're...
Because that's pretty normal. 4 is that's an average size.
I think 4 is a good number. Yeah. Look, say what you want about my medium pizza comment. There's nobody worse than the person who decides to eat pizza and all they do is eat one.
Somebody said, I'm 5'9", 140 pounds. I don't even order a medium pizza.
You guys are all jerks.
You're a medium pizza guy.
No, I'm not.
Sometimes the truth comes out when you're trying to tell a story.
You're going to need extra candy today.
Yeah. Fun fact.
Bulk them up.
The only time I've ordered medium pizza was when they have the 2 mediums for like $6.99. I'm like, I'll just get 2 mediums instead of 1 large. Those are the only times I order
medium. How far did you get into the second medium?
Oh, I've had some bad nights. I mean, I know we joke, but
stop.
I've had some nights where I've eaten two mediums.
I had half of a cheeseburger.
There's a pizza place. I can't. Listeners will have to tell me what it is.
By the way, I'm being skinny shamed right now.
You are.
For
yeah.
All the fat shaming that goes
it's
on.
Happening.
It goes the other way too, man.
Yeah. This is happening. There's somebody ought to tell me what the name, but there's a, and I'm sure there's towns that have this kind of thing all over the place, but there is a pizza place in Eugene that you get like a 5-foot by 5-foot. It's like a ginormous thing that they make. It's like one of their legendary things.
And like
it's
the extra large family style. Or whatever.
Yeah. Like, can you eat it? And it's just this, it comes in a massive box, like a special delivery. And we got that a couple of times in college, had some people over, and I don't think we ever finished it. But you just, yeah, you just get, it's like it's just a ginormous pizza.
There's some places in Portland. I don't know the names. I see them on Instagram because I follow hashtag Portland food. Mm-hmm. And there was a place I saw a large, and it looked like about the size of a 7-person table. Yeah. And they just drop it, and everybody just picks at it.
Yeah,
comes out on a forklift.
Kinda, yeah. It's kind of one of those big pie things. Yeah. But it's Halloween around here. We've
ooh.
Got.
Ooh. Are we going to play Halloween music all day today? Please tell me we're not.
Well, that's up to you.
I mean, I didn't put any in.
I haven't.
Okay. We have the Monster Mash in the system.
No.
We can't get one Monster Mash.
No, I heard this morning they were doing it all, and I was like, oh, I hope Dirt doesn't do that.
Cam was playing like music off of his phone. Oh, he was going rogue.
What?
There really is no good Halloween music.
No, there's
really
not.
Isn't.
Oh, strong disagreement.
There's not. Name a good Halloween song.
Thriller.
That's not a Halloween song. What? Not a Halloween song.
Thriller is
Sprite's
a Halloween.
Sprite's walking out today.
Thriller's a Halloween song.
He's done, yeah. By the way, at some point, I want to say this just so I remember it for later in the show. Yeah. I am going to totally blow the lid off the Patrick Ewing theory. This is the, like why is this a thing?
Just hold it. 1245.
Okay, I'll hold it.
1245.
Okay. I'll hold it.
We got a good show. Mike Parker, Pro Football Picks today. We got Crunch Time, of course. We have the Daily Ticker where we may or may not have two stops. I know for sure we have one, but we might have two. But let's start with the World Series. You guys pissed me off with that Thriller comment, by the way. That's absolutely a Halloween song. When else does that song play?
And Thriller plays all the time.
No, but like,
that's not Home Alone. It's not like you only play it 1 month out of the year.
Yeah, but when
Thriller's
it comes,
like one of the all-time great, it's the biggest selling album of all time.
Poll question right now.
Is
Thriller
no.
a Halloween song, yes or no?
It might have Halloween tie-ins, but it's not only a Halloween song.
That's ridiculous. Come on. We got a good show today. Let's talk about Game 7, the World Series. The Nationals win the World Series last night. And we'll dive into that next. Dirt and Sprague with you. Happy Halloween on this Thursday edition on 1080 The Fan. Also get into the Patrick Ewing theory that upsets Dirt a lot. How you feel about the Ewing theory name is how I feel about you saying Thriller's not a Halloween song.
The poll question is up, so the listeners will speak by the end of the show.
You guys know deep down in your hearts you're wrong.
See, I thought a listener put it really accurately. If you apply the music video, like if you watch the music video, it feels like a Halloween theme. But if you just hear the song come up on the radio,
no.
I don't think like Halloween, spooky.
Swag. I know it's in the system. At 1245, I want you to start the segment with Thriller. And I want to hear the beginning.
Yeah,
and I want you to tell
opens.
Me.
I'll say, yeah, good song.
It starts like. That's Halloween, man.
Well, the poll question is up. The listeners right. will speak by the end of the show.
We'll get to that at 1245. Daily Ticker coming up. Nationals, World Series champions. They beat the Astros last night. They were trailing for a large chunk of that game, 2-1.
2-0.
2-0, yeah, you're right. And then eventually they got the Howie Kendrick home run, which was kind of the go-ahead homer for them in the seventh. They added a couple runs. They ended up winning 6-2. A lot of controversy in this game from different angles, but the Nationals, World Series champions after starting the year 19-31.
It's an incredible story. I think it's what we love about sports. Like Davey Martinez was supposed to get fired 2 months into the season. Bryce Harper was gone. If you don't remember, their first home game they played this season, I believe, was a Sunday night baseball telecast, and the Phillies were in town. And Philly fans took over their stadium. They chanted, "We got Harper," the entire game. They blew out the Nationals. So by the end of the game, it was nothing but Philly fans. Harper hit a big home run. He was applauding the fans that stuck around that were supporting the Phillies. It was a bad look to the start of the year, and it didn't seem like they were ever going to get out of their own way. But as the season went on, they stuck together. Davey Martinez even survived some heart scares and had to go to the hospital. And it was never easy for him. And I think that was a microcosm of their postseason run. I mean, you look at being down what, 3-1 in the wild card game, having to come back against the best reliever in the National League this year and Hader against the Brewers. They were down in the series against the heavy favorite Dodgers. They had to win back-to-back games to win that series, not to mention being down in game five. I know they swept the Cardinals away like they were non-existent, but then even in this series, I mean, to not win a home game, we've never seen a team win four road games in a World Series.
That's a wild World Series to say that.
Unbelievable. The road team won all seven games, and they were just lucky that they didn't have home field advantage, I guess, because they happened to play four games away from their own stadium. And even last night, there's a lot of talk about A.J. Hinch and the pitching decisions he made. Should he have kept Greinke in? We'll get to all that. But I think sometimes when you focus on the miscues of the team that lost, you fail to credit the team that won. And that, to me, was all about the Nationals coming up with big hits just like they had done the entire postseason. I thought Max Scherzer deserved more credit maybe than what he deserved, not only for pitching through the pain, but I think the forgotten storyline of that game was his ability to pitch out of traffic early.
He got jammed up a couple times.
The Astros had them on the ropes. It felt like every single inning, including the second when they scored their first run. They had a couple of guys on. He just kept just dancing out of danger. Gave up 2 runs in 5 innings, and ultimately the bats got it going when they needed to the most. But even the Howie Kendrick home run, for all the criticism about the moves the Astros made to the bullpen, go look at that Howie Kendrick home run and where the pitch was located.
I'm glad you said that, because I saw, it might have been the Pitching Ninja or somebody else, but sure, Basically somebody replayed that GIF, and the location of that pitch, somebody goes, this is actually a really good pitch. It just happens to be better hitting.
It's at the bottom of the strike zone on the outside corner of the plate. He just got beat. Like, sometimes you tip your cap, there's nothing you can do. Now, if he comes down and just milks one right down the middle, and he hits it out for a 2-run home run, we're having a different conversation. But that's where I get it. The Hinch stuff is going to be an issue today. But, like, tip your cap, man. Howie Kendrick took a pitch low and away opposite field off the foul pole. That was an incredible home run.
And I know that lineup, how dangerous it is. When he hit that home run, though, it feel like it sucked the entire life out of that stadium. Even with those Astros having, what, 3 more innings to go.
Yeah, it was top of the seventh inning.
It still felt like everybody collectively went, oh, no. Here we go again. The Nationals are just, they fight. Then we win 3 in a row on them. Then they battle out of game 6. And then here they are in game 7. We feel like we kind of have them on the ropes. And Howie Kendrick hits an opposite the field home run. Here's Max Scherzer after winning the World Series.
1 through 25, everybody. That's the only way I can describe it. The energy, the camaraderie, the belief in one another. It doesn't matter. Everybody just believes in each other. It just means I'm part of the greatest team in 2019. These guys, they battled, didn't matter. It was staying the fight. That was our model. It was the next guy up. Everybody gave it their all. Whoever it was always going to produce. And we took it all the way, and we won the whole thing.
And here's the World Series MVP, Steven Strasburg, who went 5-0 this postseason and was lights out in Game 6.
It's almost like we've done it so many times that it's like we have to get punched in the face to kind of wake up. And I think it's just the MO, we don't quit, and we never quit throughout the season despite kind of everybody saying that we were done.
Never really rooted or hated the Nationals, even though they're in the same division as my team.
You had no reason to hate them. They always choked in the playoffs.
I mean, they were the new version of us.
They were, yeah.
But what I like in sports is I love longevity players who end up getting rewarded. Yeah. And it's not to say these guys haven't been properly compensated, but like watching Ryan Zimmerman look around and go, holy S, he couldn't believe that they had won it. Strasburg having that moment, having that series and having that postseason run. That's one of those feel good things for me in sports that I love to see guys like that have been with a team their entire career and they get rewarded. On the other side, I think you're right. Washington deserves all the credit for winning the World Series. I'm not trying to take that away from them. But you can't also gloss over that what happened with that pitching situation for Houston last night was an abomination. Here is A.J. Hinch's reasoning for why he pulled Zach Greinke.
I wanted to take him out an inning or a batter too early rather than a batter too late. And, Kendrick and Cabrera was where I had really focused on Will Harris at that point. Will's been tremendous for us. I knew I had Osuna. I knew I had, Garrett if need be. And so Will coming in to spin the breaking ball, he got the swing and miss, and then he hit a ball off the foul pole in right field, and off they go. So it's a decision you I'll have to live with. I'll think about it, and I don't know what would have happened had I left him in, but that was kind of where I targeted based on where the game was going and what we had available to us.
Yeah, it's brutal because it's easy to question the guys after the decision doesn't go well. There are moments. Like, did we get the crystal ball thing? Did we get that? No? Okay. Oh, we'll get that later. But there was a, because last week I had asked Cristobal about momentum.
Sure.
Yeah. With Washington. Remember, he went for it on his fourth down.
On his own 30-yard line.
On his own 30.
Yeah.
It was a gutsy call. And I asked about momentum. He said, absolutely, you can feel momentum. Zach Greinke had his best outing last night.
He was dominant last
night. And I know he gave up the solo shot to Rendon, but what was he at, 80 pitches?
He was at 80, yeah.
Sometimes I think guys that are in a sport their whole lives, the people on the couch like you, I, and everybody else, 99.9999% of the time, we never know what we're talking about. There is that sliver percentage, though, that where the coach, I think, makes a critical error and doesn't see it for what it is. I wouldn't have pulled Zach Greinke last night. Would you?
No, I would have let him face one more hitter.
So, yeah, give him that opportunity. Maybe he gets out of the inning. You have the damage is not as bad as it was, and you're left looking like a genius versus he pulled him too early. They come in, and the Houston bullpen was atrocious.
It was really bad last night. It was a tough, tough moment for Zach Greinke because in a Game 7, that's one of the best pitching performances I've seen in a long time. I mean, he was dominant. He was living at the bottom of the strike zone, changing his speeds. I mean, the Nationals had no offense for the first six innings of that game, and it wasn't even like you could sit there and say they were hitting the ball hard and just it was lining right at guys. I mean, how many times did Zach Greinke field a weak hit ground ball right back at him and toss the guy out at first base? The only base hit that was a hard hit they had early in the game was Juan Soto, I believe, in the second inning, and the very next dude hit into a double play, and he was erased just like that. So Greinke was dominant last night. It's tough that it ends up kind of unraveling on them once again at the end of the game. Because he was at 80 and because of how good he was pitching, I probably would have kept him in. I understand Hinch's thinking there of if you leave him in for one more hitter and he gives up the home run to Howie Kendrick, we all sit here and say, why did you leave Zach Greinke in that long? Because he had given up a home run to Rendon and then he walked the very next hitter. So you felt like maybe he's losing control a little bit. I think the biggest frustration I would have as an Astros fan is Gerrit Cole's the best pitcher in baseball right now.
Ooh, we got to get to him too. His numbers,
yeah, his future is that was an interesting sight last night. But his numbers this year were unmatched. Like, he was dominant, and he was their best pitcher the entire season. He was their secret weapon in the bullpen. They got him up and warmed him up two different times. I didn't understand why they did it the first time. I think like the fifth inning. It's like, why is Gerrit Cole up? Greinke is on cruise control right now. Why are you warming him up? You need to save him. And then they got him up again and they didn't go to him. And Hinch's thinking was he wanted to use him in a lead. But I don't quite understand that, because you ended up saving him and you didn't pitch him. There's no game eight. Like, this was your season. And if you don't want to bring him in the middle of an inning, I would have liked to have seen him in that moment. It's 2-1 in the seventh before the Kendrick home run. I would have honestly gone to my closer and gone to Ozuna and say, hey, get me out of the seventh inning. And then I have Gerrit Cole for the eighth and the ninth to try and close this thing down, because he said he wanted him to save it out. But even furthermore, going into the ninth inning, this was a 4-2 game. You're in the top of the ninth inning, you're down by two, and the Nationals bullpen has been anything but solid, right? Like, Daniel Hudson has had his issues. Let's not act like he's this dominant, untouchable reliever. He's had problems. And you decide to go to, what, Joe Smith in the ninth inning instead of Gerrit Cole, who immediately comes out and gives up a couple of hits, walks a guy, you give up two more runs, and then that's when the energy was completely out of the stadium.
Yeah, it sucked out after.
I mean, you knew the game was over. You're down by four going into the ninth, whereas maybe you bring in Gerrit Cole, you throw him in the top of the ninth, he goes boom, boom, boom. It kind of gets the stadium back into the game a little bit. You had the top of the order coming up and the bottom of the inning. I don't like going down without throwing your best weapon at another team, and the Astros did that last night.
Yeah, speaking of Gerrit Cole, I want to get to this quote here. I saw this on Twitter last night. Somebody went up to Gerrit Cole and asked, hey, were you ready to pitch? By the way, A.J. Hinch said he wanted to pitch Gerrit Cole with a lead
only
and not
with the
trailing.
Lead. He wanted him to close the game and save the game.
Right, so that was the thinking for A.J. Hinch. Gerrit Cole was asked about it, and he said this, quote, I'm not employed by the team, declared the right-handed pitcher. I guess as a representative of myself. And then he went on to explain how he felt about that. I mean,
it's a
that's
a very weird situation.
Well, he's a free agent. He's gone. I mean, I can't imagine he's going back to Houston
that quickly after the game. He took off his Astros hat and was wearing a Scott Boras hat in the clubhouse.
Did you see him walking off, though, watching the celebration?
I did. Yeah.
He looked pissed. Why did I not play in this last game of the World Series?
I would be, too.
So, you know, it just AJ Hinch is a really good manager.
He's won a chance. And he made the right decision when Dave Roberts didn't game seven 2 years ago.
That's true.
He went to Charlie Morton when they felt like they could get the game under control. McCullers was
it. Right.
He started that game for Houston. I can't remember how long he went.
I think he went three or four innings.
He wasn't that sharp. You know, was walking some guys, a lot of traffic early. And he said, you know what? Screw this. And he went to a starter in relief and he rode Charlie Morton the entire way. And, you know, vice versa on the other side. I'll tip my cap to Davey Martinez, man. I think it's easy to outthink the room in certain moments. And I was almost yelling it at my TV. I didn't want Patrick Corbin in the game. And when he got in the game, I thought, God, get him out of the game as fast as you can. But he rode a hot arm. Patrick Corbin had it last night. He gave up a leadoff single and then got a double play and erased the guy. He gave up only one other hit. He threw three scoreless innings, struck out three. That was the best Corbin had looked in the postseason. And he let him go three innings and bridge that gap from Scherzer to Hudson to close it out.
So the Washington Nationals win the World Series. Is that technically their first, or did they win it in like the 1910s or something?
It's the franchise's first.
Okay.
So if you start with the Expos.
Yeah.
Now the Senators won one way back in the day.
But they became the Texas Rangers, right? They moved to Dallas. So that's the Rangers.
This history. Franchise that started as the Expos and became the Nationals, this is their first World Series championship.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure on that because I believe I might have heard it on primetime or I heard it somewhere else, but I thought I had heard early in the series that this was their first World Series appearance in like 80 years or something.
The city's first. Yeah, the city of D.C.'s first World Series appearance. Because they had the Washington Senators way back in the day. They moved and became the Texas Rangers.
But the Senators never went to the World Series.
No, they did. In the 1920s. Okay.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It was the second World Series appearance, and I'm kind of like, man.
Yeah, it's the first time the city has been there, but for the organizational history, just like the Sonics turned into the Thunder, for that organization's history, this was their first appearance and first championship.
Hell of a turnaround from them this year. The Washington Nationals World Series champions. We'll dive back into this at 12:45. Dirt does not like the Ewing theory. As Bryce Harper leaves the Nationals, they end up winning the World Series his first season away in Philly. So we'll dive back into that. But coming up next, we have the Daily Ticker. I tried to get a guest in D.C. They're super busy right now. They're swamped. So we're going to go to the biggest college football game of the weekend nationally, and that's Georgia at Florida, and we'll talk with Chip Towers, who covers Georgia. We'll do that next on the Daily Ticker. But
in this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
This is the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Daily Ticker time, 12:34 on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. We're going to go back into the World Series a bit, but we wanted to jump into the biggest college football game nationally this weekend is Georgia heading down to Jacksonville to take on Florida. 12:30 kick our time on CBS. And Chip Towers from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution is joining us now. He covers the Bulldogs. He's actually headed to Jacksonville as we speak. And Chip, thanks for hopping on with us in Portland, man. This is basically the fight for the East, correct, to get to the SEC title game?
Yeah, that's the way it usually is when these two teams meet down here. It hasn't always been the case, but it's usually the case. And it's definitely the case this year. You know, Florida ranked number six, Georgia ranked number eight. Essentially, it's a playoff game. That's kind of what, you know, college football has gotten to be, and definitely in the SEC, you know, it's all about getting to Atlanta for the SEC championship game. And then the general consideration is that the winner from that is always going to be in the college football playoff. And certainly with Alabama and LSU playing next weekend for the West and Georgia and Florida playing this weekend for the East, that looks to be the case this year for sure.
Well, and what's been going on with Georgia the last couple of weeks? I mean, they came in with obviously high expectations. They can still get there if they continue to win, and that would start this weekend with a big one against Florida. But they beat Notre Dame early in the season. Then you have the weird head-scratching loss to South Carolina. I believe they were held scoreless in the first half against Kentucky before finally pulling away there. But what have you seen? What have been the issues with Georgia the last couple of weeks?
Well, you know, I'm really eager. This is a real referendum game for me to that end to kind of see because, you know, obviously, you know, of the two teams, Florida's played the more difficult schedule. And, you know, what we're going to find out this weekend in Jacksonville was whether that South Carolina loss was truly anomalous or not, right? You know, because, I mean, there's no reason in the world that Georgia should have lost to South Carolina. They were the better team. You know, certainly South Carolina was the better team that day, but it was almost like Georgia had to go way out of its way to lose the game. They had four turnovers. South Carolina had none. They missed two field goals. Rodrigo Blankenship never misses field goals. He missed two. One was blocked, and then a 42-yarder he hooked left in overtime. So it was just a weird game, and Jake Fromm never throws interceptions. He threw three, and Georgia had another turnover besides, and they weren't really bad turnovers. I mean, you know, two of them were off receivers' hands. It was just a weird, weird day, so I think it was an anomaly, but I don't know. And, you know, meanwhile, you got Florida. When, you know, I've been breaking this game down all week long, and when I look at it, you know, Georgia has the better personnel. And, you know, but you got Florida's ranked number six, Georgia's ranked number eight, but you look at the Sharks out in Vegas, they all like Georgia, and I do too. So we'll see. You know, the Kentucky thing, you got to kind of throw it out. It was a monsoon, just a really bad rainstorm. Now, other teams played in the rain that day, but I don't know, it seemed especially bad in Athens, and yes, Georgia was scoreless in the first half, and they won 21-0 over Kentucky. Good defense, bad offense, I guess, but really you got to throw that one out. So this game's going to tell me a lot about whether Georgia is who we thought they were in the preseason or something far short of that.
Chip Towers is our guest, Atlanta Journal-Constitution, joining us now to talk about the Georgia-Florida game this weekend in Jacksonville, 12:30 kick on CBS. Chip, you know, a lot of people, I think, in the country going into the season thought the top three were going to be Bama, Clemson, and then Georgia was getting that kind of respect, and rightfully so, given what they've done the last couple years. Even though one loss to me shouldn't define a team and knock them completely down, do you think LSU and Alabama are in a league of their own in the SEC, or do you think Georgia is still deserving of being in that competition, or that tier, I should say, to be in competition to win the SEC this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all still figuring that out. You know, I mean, let's face it. I mean, Florida right now, their number six national ranking, they've gotten a lot of value out of their loss to LSU on the road. So, you know, I think we're all still trying to figure that out, whether it's in the Big Ten, the SEC, the Pac-12, you know, who's who and what's what. But, you know, right now, yes. I mean, you know, certainly they're one and two. Alabama and LSU look like they're in a different on a different level than everybody else. And I haven't seen anything covering every one of Georgia's games yet to tell me that they're as good as those two teams, but right, you never can tell until you get, you know, actually on the field with them. And look, you know, whoever wins out of Georgia and Florida, just based on the rest of the East, is disintegrated between injuries and just bad teams. So whoever wins this one is going to get LSU or Alabama. They'll decide it on the field eventually.
Yeah, yeah, there's no doubt. And just for the Georgia perception as well, I mean, you look at the Vegas line this week, they're the lower or higher, depending on how you look at it, ranked team, number eight against number six Florida, and they're a six-point favorite. So it tells you what Vegas thinks about Georgia this year. What do you feel about that line, and just how do you think this one plays out?
Yeah, that's, I those guys make money out there in Vegas, and I always watch that with great interest. Of course, Georgia was, 24.5-point favorite, or I think it might have closed it at 21 going into the South Carolina game. And it just goes to show, I mean, it comes down to what happens on Saturday, and turnovers are a huge deal in college football. Let me tell you, this game in particular, you know, Georgia-Florida is very unusual. It's played at a supposed neutral site. I mean, Georgia fans, I mean, I'm in the traffic on I-95 right now. There's Georgia flags flapping everywhere. They come down here to the what they call the First Coast. There's all kinds of barrier islands just off, and just fill up the condominiums and come down here for this game every year. So it's a 50-50 stadium. It's pretty incredible. It's a very momentous game. So crazy things happen. So it's kind of like if somebody gets a turnover or there's a kick return for a touchdown, sometimes you can't stop that momentum. And so that's going to be a big storyline in this game, is who's able to grab the momentum early and you know, carry it across the finish line.
Here we go. Chip Towers, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, covering the Georgia Bulldogs. He's headed to Jacksonville right now to cover the game this week in Georgia against Florida, 12:30 kick CBS. Chip, thanks so much for hopping on with us yet again here in Portland, man. Enjoy that game.
All right, I will. See you guys.
Absolutely. There we go. Good stuff from Chip Towers on the big national college football game this weekend. That's probably going to dictate the East and the SEC.
Yeah.
Who's then going to either take on Alabama or LSU, who play each other next weekend, not this weekend.
Yeah, and as he mentioned, the rest of that division, when you look at it outside of Georgia and Florida,
it's crappy.
You go from there, Missouri, Tennessee, South Carolina, Kentucky, Vanderbilt. That's the rest of the SEC.
It's pretty bad.
This is it. Whoever wins this game is likely to win that division and face off in the SEC title game. And whoever wins this game, just from a local angle, Oregon's got to get through USC, obviously. But if Georgia wins this game, they're ranked behind Oregon right now. They will jump Oregon if they win this game. And Florida is going to be right in the mix of a national championship race and college football playoff race if they win this, because as he mentioned, they're getting a lot of mileage out of their loss. It was a good back and forth game. I think 42-28 was the final. They were on the road against LSU. That's the number one ranked team in the country right now. That's not a bad loss by any stretch of the imagination. So if they win this one, I mean, Georgia's going to jump right back into the top five.
Bill Simmons created a thing years and years ago called the Ewing Theory. It's where a team loses their best player and they end up playing better and doing better without them. And it's a very interesting theory to follow throughout sports. The Colts, for example, are testing this out this year. A lot of people are wondering, oh, is Brissett and the Colts going to do really well, even without Andrew Luck? Dirt wants to rename it the Bryce Harper Theory. And is Thriller a Halloween song? Because we're going to have to rejoin with that. And I need to prove these two schmucks wrong next on The Fan. This isn't a contest. This is the Halloween song. Just take the L.
Just over there, we're just supporting pedophiles on the show now, huh? No. Jeez, man.
Stop.
Wow.
Stop.
Wow.
Stop it.
It's a good song.
Something evil. What happens on Halloween?
Here's this, though. All right, here's my only argument against you, because you're blowing me out in the poll question right now.
I'm what?
You're blowing me out in the poll question right now. Okay? Get your head out of the gutter.
That's not what I heard the first time. I'm glad you...
Get your head out of the gutter.
Yeah. that was a bit aggressive.
When you like Monster Mash, for example, is the all-time classic, the Monster Mash, right? Like, everybody knows that song. You've heard it since you were a kid. Would you ever listen to the Monster Mash outside of Halloween? If I played you that song in the middle of June, you would tell me, what the hell's wrong with you? If we're driving around in my car, right, we're going somewhere, Sprague and I are going to get a beer after the show,
okay,
and the Monster Mash comes on my like iPod, and I'm like, yeah, turn it up, Monster Mash.
I would wonder, one, why that's on your playlist right now.
You would look at me like I'm crazy.
Yes.
If I'm driving around in June and Thriller comes on, you wouldn't be like, bro, it ain't Halloween season.
But I don't listen to Thriller unless it's Halloween time.
Really?
I've heard it at a bowling alley, and I've gotten mad.
Really?
Because it'd been like an August night, and I'm like, what? What are we doing with Thriller
right now? That's my whole argument with like Home Alone. Like, people who try and argue, like, Home Alone, you don't watch Home Alone in April.
Yeah, but you would think with all the zombie shows now... Because that's more about what it is.
Yeah. But let me say this about Home Alone, because I don't want to get into the Home Alone Christmas movie or not. That's so played out, you can't do it.
No.
But what I would retort with, even though I agree with you...
It's a good song.
I mean, it's impossible not to dance to the song.
Yeah.
Is that, like, ABC Family or whatever that channel's called now, you'll see it on AMC. They played Home Alone this summer.
Yeah.
I saw it on my TV guide in July, and I thought...
Well, because they do Christmas in July.
Okay, but like,
that's a thing.
So there's clearly an audience for a Christmas movie to play
sure,
in and on Christmas
time. But it's
time.
Done in Christmas in July. It's not just randomly on TV.
No. This is a Halloween song. I'm sorry to disappoint you. I see what you're saying. Obviously, Michael Jackson's going to get played far more than whoever created the Monster Mash song.
I just can't believe you're supporting Michael Jackson. I'm disappointed
Stop.
In you. I thought you were better than that.
Stop.
Speaking of which, we really need to close our or change our clothes music. We really need to do that.
And we've said that for months.
I know. I'm
at what point
do
people not care anymore?
I make a vow right now. It's Thursday. I will come up with a new song this weekend. I will dump it into the system. We'll have a new one on Monday.
Well, do you want to do that, or do you want to like try out different, like each one of us come up with what we think would be a good clothes song? We'll throw it
closing
out.
Closing time.
We'll throw it out to the listeners.
No. That was, who is the Mariners closer that used to be the bartender?
Yeah.
Is it Will Helmsen?
Helmsen.
Is that who
yeah.
it was?
Yeah. Yeah. Will Helmsen.
And he played that the closing time song as he came into the game.
I don't know.
It's a good song, though, too.
We might have to do that just because we do the Rebecca Black. We might just have to have a bad clothes song every day of the week.
No.
No matter what.
No.
No matter what.
I will not allow that.
Okay, let's get to the other thing, because clearly you guys were both wrong.
Sure.
I think everybody overwhelmingly is saying it's a Halloween song.
Okay.
The Ewing Theory, see, I was kind of surprised. You hadn't heard of the Ewing Theory until today.
I've heard of it, but I don't know all the specifics behind it. Like, okay. I don't know how, where it was came up with. I've heard of, and Bill Simmons tweets nonstop of it with Patrick Ewing in, like, jerseys. And he's done it constantly in the last month with him in a Colts jersey and him in a Nationals jersey. And I've tried to connect the dots, but I never knew the origin of the story.
Very quickly, the origin is basically the Knicks got to the finals. Patrick Ewing played about half that year. Remember, it was a strike shortened season, so it was about 50 games.
The Blazers were in the Western Conference Finals that year, and they lost to the San Antonio Spurs.
Well, Spurs were good.
Yes.
So the Knicks had Ewing half the year, but it was the first half, not the second half. They got the eighth seed. They had the improbable run where they went to the NBA finals and they got swept out of the finals by the Spurs. So he created the Ewing theory then on the premise of when a team loses their best player,
they get better.
Is it crazy to suggest maybe they get better? Now, you don't like the name of it, but I don't think you can change it.
Well, because it's stupid and it doesn't make any sense.
What? It's not stupid.
It is, because it doesn't make any sense.
In what way?
So the Knicks, with Patrick Ewing healthy and playing, how many times did they go to the NBA Finals?
One.
Okay. When he got hurt, they also went to the NBA Finals. What happened in both those series? They lost. You know what happened when they had Patrick Ewing?
They went to Game 7.
What happened when they didn't have Patrick Ewing?
Well, they got swept by the Twin Towers.
So they weren't better without Patrick Ewing than they were with Patrick Ewing. The theory doesn't make any sense. If they had won the NBA championship in 1999, it would make sense.
But hold on. The theory isn't named because...
They had a better season with him healthy.
I know. I'm not arguing that. I actually agree with you on this point.
it doesn't make any sense.
If you would have added 10 games to that season, they wouldn't have made the playoffs. They were one game out from the 9 seed.
The Charlotte Hornets were a game behind them for the 8 seed.
So I agree with you. However... You're wrong in this way. It's called the Ewing theory. It's not called Ewing definitive better without. It's they lost their best player and they still made a run to do something you didn't think they would do without their best player.
So why isn't it called the Griffey theory?
Well, because the Ewing one was first. Because Griffey left the Mariners after that. But... So he calls it the Ewing theory. We don't need to argue about the name of it. It's never going to change.
But there have to be better examples is all I'm saying.
Well, this year is a better example.
Bryce Harper was the face of the Washington Nationals. He leaves in free agency. Everybody says they're done, and they go on to win a championship. And you have a stark comparison of the Washington Nationals with him. They never won a series. They never won a series. They always lost. They never won a series. They hardly even won any playoff games. And then he leaves and they win the World Series the next year.
Right.
Like, that is the Bryce Harper theory.
Yeah, it falls right in as the lone example of proving the year. You're proving the Ewing theory right versus, let's say, the Colts flame out in the wild. Hold on. The Colts flame out in the wild card game. Well, the Colts went farther with Andrew Luck. So they went with the Ewing theory.
Sure.
Like a little cute little kid looking at me, right? I can't see who that is. Nice little key. Oh, it's the twins. They're M&Ms. So the Ewing theory with the Colts would prove incorrect. They were a good team, but they couldn't quite accomplish what they could with a better quarterback. The Nationals are the lead example of a team that ended up proving you don't need a quote-unquote best player, and that's debatable on that roster anyway.
Yeah,
but here we are.
I think there have to be better historical examples prior to Patrick Ewing that you can point to of a player leaving and the team becoming better without him.
Well, I wouldn't say they were. I think you have examples of showing how truly great an entire team is sans their best player. I think you can have that exist without saying, "Oh, it's not true." I'll give you an example here. 1994, the Chicago Bulls lost their best player.
Yes.
Highly considered the greatest player of all time.
Yes.
They won 55 games and went to the second round of the playoffs and came within a game-winning shot of maybe getting to the Eastern Conference Finals. So while that doesn't prove they're better off without Michael, it clearly shows to all these Jordan stands, oh, yeah, his team was pretty stinking good. It wasn't a bunch of bums that he carried for three championships.
Right. I cracked up because I Googled Patrick Ewing just to look up his numbers from over the years. And the first thing that pops up when you Google his name is Patrick Ewing theory.
Yeah.
That's the first thing that pops up.
Say what you want about it, but Simmons is totally on to at least the idea of looking at teams without. No. I mean, he's on to the idea of suggesting could a team do better with actually a player we thought was their best player Carolina Panthers are kind of going through this
now. A listener brings up a valid point, and if this is true, then there's more validity to it.
Okay.
P1 Ryan is saying that Georgetown had never won the championship with Ewing he left. Yeah. Georgetown won the national
title. That is correct. So then I believe, was that Alonzo Mourning that won it after him?
So I changed my, if that's the case and that's where this started, then it makes more sense because you couldn't win it with him. He leaves for the NBA, you win it without him.
So
that's the Peyton Manning theory at Tennessee. They had Peyton Manning in 1998.
And then T. Martin.
And everybody thought he should have won the Heisman. He's number one overall pick, and he leaves, and everybody thought, no way. And then T. Martin won the national championship the next year.
Sure.
So that makes a little bit more sense. The Knicks one, I just chuckled at because they made a finals with him, and they went further in the finals with him than they did without him.
Right.
So there's no theory there. They weren't better without him than they were with him.
So that's my mistake. Yes. But I think because he didn't create that in 1989, nobody knew he did it later.
Yeah.
I think he did it post, and I think he included the Georgetown example because they won it without him, and then the night. So we got that cleared up.
Okay.
I don't know if baseball works here. I don't know if you can have a Ewing theory in baseball, given how random it can be who steps up, who pitches well.
One player doesn't have the impact that it can in other sports in baseball.
But I think in the NBA, it absolutely holds court. And then in the NFL, I think it can still work because if it's the quarterback position, we know how important that one is.
Yes. Yeah. You have a lot of examples over the years. Hell, my team's an example of this. I mean, Barry Bonds was one of the best players in the history of the game, and he retired. I want to say his last year was 2007 or 2008. And like 2 years after he was gone, they won their first championship in the history of being in San Francisco with a bunch of random ass dudes. Like nobody saw that coming.
And that's unfair though to Bonds because he was a stud in that 0-2 World Series.
Right. It wasn't like it was all on him. And this is unfair to Bryce Harper. Like Bryce Harper wasn't the thing holding the Washington Nationals back. That opinion is ridiculous.
Right.
I also don't agree. Like somebody said, this proves that mega contracts hold the team back. Ooh. I don't agree with that either. I honestly don't.
Well, you only have examples of how many mega contracts. Five?
Sure. I mean, yeah.
And they change. Mega, $200+ million.
And they change with every era, right? I think the definition of a mega contract is different now than it obviously was 10 years ago. A-Rod's contract, for example, compared to Bryce Harper's, right? I mean, they're different numbers.
I'm glad you said that. It doesn't prove that big contracts don't work because A-Rod had a big contract and they won it in 09. Yeah,
that big contract went to New York and he actually had a really good postseason in 2009 and he won a world championship. So I don't like that. I also don't like how we immediately, Bryce Harper's been the butt of a lot of jokes and it's funny because he leaves and they win and he had the quote at the press conference saying, I'm going to bring a championship to DC and we'll slip of the tongue.
Yeah.
Right. So I understand the jokes and why they're made. He has 12 years left on his deal. Like, we really feel like we can analyze this as a total failure in Philadelphia. He has 12 years left on that contract. He's still in the prime of his career. And for this, you can't hand out mega contracts. Dude, the Nationals handed out a huge contract to Max Scherzer. They handed out a huge contract to Steven Strasburg. They made Patrick Corbin one of the highest paid pitchers in free agency last year. He was one of the first guys and only guys to sign early. And they're prepared to hand over $200 million-plus to Anthony Rendon because he might be the MVP of the National League.
Don't forget Strasburg. Strasburg's going to opt out, get another contract, and Juan Soto in like 4 years is going to get a mega deal too if he continues on this direction.
I just don't like that. Like, baseball teams got a lot of money to spend, and especially now where most of these contracts, like Harper's a prime example of this, they spread it out so far, it's the same average salary per year, so it doesn't eat up your money year after year.
Isn't it like 35 a year?
It's less
or
than that. I think it's 25 million a year. It's, you know, 25 million times 13 years, right? It's a ton of money. That is, I mean, that's a good paycheck. But when you flatten it out and it doesn't go up as the contract goes on, you can really avoid these. I think that's where Major League Baseball teams have learned. You know, you look at the Pujols contract and what he got and how much he's getting paid now. You know, Miguel Cabrera, another guy, right? You can't stagger it later on because then you're paying way too much money for an old and outdated ball player.
Big Sook, listener to the show, driving in, texting me, said,
is that breaking news? Should we do it? Yeah, let's do it. This just in. Jason Tukanik's listening. Let's go.
There you go. Says Oilers lost Gretzky, still won the Stanley Cup without him. Best player in any sports history. Yeah. Won without him. I would argue, though, they did win a few cups with him before he left.
Just a few. Yeah. They won a few. I'd say a few with him. Yeah. But that's not a bad theory, too.
And can I say one more thing? And then we'll go. We got Mike Parker coming up at 1 o'clock.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, Sook.
My last comment on this would be, I got some tweets and I've seen a lot of the social media narrative, right? Like, cause I'm with you. It is fun to make fun of the Bryce Harper thing, but the whole like, How do you think Bryce Harper's handling this right now? I my response was, he's counting $300 million. Well, I think he's going to be okay.
And I think he's probably genuinely happy for guys like Zimmerman and Strasburg, who he was there with for a number of years.
Yeah, it's not like he left and was like, I hate those guys.
It's not
guys.
Like he hates those guys.
Yeah, he performed pretty well in the postseason, too. Let's not act like he was like, like somebody texted him, Bond sucked. He couldn't field his position. Like well, first off, are you high? Go look up Barry Bonds' numbers in the 2002 World Series.
He was a stud in the 02.
Hit a home
series,
run and felt like every time they pitched to him. Yes, he was old and outdated at that point in left field. He couldn't field it like he used to. But Bonds had that label before 2002. He was a perennial choker.
Pittsburgh.
Just like A-Rod. Yeah. A-Rod was a guy who always got to the biggest stage and he failed. And then in 2019, he finally came through. He had the big contract and he won and a lot of those fears went away. But yeah, when you try and analyze like a contract, the first of 12 years, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like big money contracts can't win. I'm not buying that. J.D. Martinez got a massive contract from the Red Sox a couple of years ago. He won a World Series in his first year in Boston. Did that contract not work, work out for him?
I don't think people are counting $100 million contracts. I think they're going into the $250 to $300 million range where some of these guys are creeping in. Like Mike Trout is an example. He's got so many years left. We'll see what Joe Maddon can do with him if they go sign Gerrit Cole or something.
They got one of the best farm systems in baseball. I think that's a bit over aggressive to say that you can't win because the salary cap situation, you can still field a good team around them. You got arbitration for some of your young players. You can make it work.
In baseball, I don't think you punish the guy who's paid the highest for them losing. Also doesn't deserve all the credit if they win. Baseball is just funny that way. You can have a great player at a position like Mike Trout. You're going to need everybody else to do their job and play well to ultimately get that World Series. All right, let's get to hour number two. The Beavs head to the desert, take on Arizona, who just fired their defensive coordinator. The voice of Oregon State football, Mike Doc Parker, will join us to kick off hour number two next on The Fan.